Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Hola, Internet. It's Kim and Amanda from Food Book Fair, your favorite festival of writing about eating, back on the airwaves at Heritage Radio Network in the back of Roberta's in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. Ba, 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 ba. Talking about recommended reading.
We love to read and we love to recommend, so this is our perfect show. So thanks for listening. Thanks, Kim, for that lovely introduction, talking about what Food Book Fair is. We're a festival of writing about eating. You can check us out at foodbookfair.com. We also do signings at the Green Market every Saturday. And you can listen to us live here every Tuesday on Heritage Radio Network at 2 p.m. We have an extremely exciting show today. We're joined by two incredibly accomplished women, Mary Cleaver, the chef owner of the Cleaver Co. If you don't know who she is, you better check her out, and you can check out the Green Table in Chelsea Market, one of my favorite places to go. And we are joined as well by Elizabeth Balkin, the executive director of the Foundation for New York's Strongest, also could be known as the Department of Sanitation.
Thank you.
So we got a full house today, again, hyping an event that's going to come up soon, the Food Waste Fair that both of these folks are involved with, and we're excited to get into that. But first, I think we're going to talk about what we're reading, watching, and listening to.
Definitely. Well, Kim and I had the pleasure of being on another podcast. We cheated on our own podcast with someone else's.
We can't get enough of being on other podcasts. Let's be real.
Let me tell you, it was worth it. I'll tell you, it was definitely worth it. We were treated to an appearance on The Stew, which is a podcast by our friend Jason Stewart. You might know him as Them Jeans. It's his food podcast. He normally records it in Los Angeles, but we were lucky that he was in New York and asked us to pop on. So that was really fun. We talked about a lot of different kinds of things.
Some that had nothing to do with food.
Like tampon delivery. And
you can get anything delivered. No.
We did talk about some food, too. We talked about cookbook publishing. We talked about a ranking of French fries. We discussed the perfect bite. And you know what? Honestly, Jason, it made me want to make our podcast even better than it is, because the time flew by. It was like we were talking to him for like an hour and it was like gone. So you can definitely check it out on iTunes. It's called The Stew, and listen to our episode and tweet or Instagram message us at Food Book Fair and tell us what you think.
You can also check it out at thestewpodcast.com, and perhaps, and or, in case you missed it, Jason also recorded at Food Book Fair 2017, hashtag FBF2017, and a special episode of The Stew with live interviews featuring folks at the fair, like Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, Liz Pruitt, godmother of Tartine, talking about super life or death questions inspired by the Proust or Proust, however you want to say it, questionnaire. So check out that episode as a throwback, too, if you haven't yet.
Yeah. Cool. So maybe
so you're just listening to other shit that we've done together, basically.
Yeah. I've been kind of slacking on the reading. I'm going to get back in it.
Self-love.
Yeah. I have a Zadie Smith book queued up for my vacation that I'm going to take. So, oh my gosh. Of course, the title. The yellow cover.
NW.
NW? Is that what? It's a bright yellow color cover. I went to the secret library on Jersey Street, and they had it in there, and I was like, oh my gosh, I must take it out. It was like all the other libraries, you know, it's never, and these Zadie Smith books never there. So I was attracted to the bright yellow color. It's one of the newer ones. I'll have to look it up.
It's not NW, it's the newer one. Yeah. Name is escaping.
Yeah. Swing Time.
It's Swing Time.
Yes.
Okay.
NW also has a similarly designed cover.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward. That's okay. Kim, what have you been reading, watching, or listening to?
By the way, that was Mary with the clutch.
Thank you, Mary.
Tip in with the Zadie Smith over there.
Love Zadie Smith.
I've read Swing Time. I hope you really like it. I can't wait to talk about Angel Delight Pudding on air after you get through that part of the book. It comes up multiple times.
I'll finish it on vacation.
I grew up in the suburbs eating instant pudding, so this is definitely something that spoke to me when I read it. I just read The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison while I was visiting my folks in suburban Detroit, and that was something that was, it's been something I've been meaning to read. I love Toni, and there's definitely a lot of symbolism about who eats what and who doesn't get to eat what and who does not have in that book. I read it on the first day of 4 days being out there and then was scrambling to find anything else to read. I read all of my brother's back issues of Bon Appetit, and then I read a bunch of, hello, there's someone pressing their face against the glass of the window of our radio booth next to my face. We record in the back of Roberta's Pizza, in case anyone didn't know that. You can come do that, too, if you're dining here Tuesdays at 2 p.m. I read a bunch of Taiwan Panorama, which is a bilingual Chinese-English magazine about the pleasures and treasures of the Republic of China, Ilha Formosa, the place that I'm from.
Did your parents bring those home for you?
We've had a subscription for like 25 years. It's a Western world publication.
You did a deep dive into reading it.
I just try to read anything. Okay. I didn't touch the Nicholas Sparks books that my mom had, though. But like, I always need something to read when I'm eating or just like doing something, or even if I'm like watching TV with my dad. My dad has started. We watched a lot of Wimbledon over the weekend.
That's nice.
But I need to like multitask somehow and have like something in front of me. So I really dug. My folks just moved back from a few years living and working abroad, so they don't really have any up to date magazines or books or anything. So
sounds like you may do without wasting anything.
Speaking of.
Yes.
We're just going to keep teeing the shit up.
We invited and are honored that Mary and Elizabeth are here to talk about an upcoming event this coming July 25th. It's called the Food Waste Fair. Very similar to Food Book Fair in the title, but a little bit different, as, you know, they changed up a word or two. And we're excited to talk to them and hear what it's all about, how you can be there, who should be there, who is going to be there. But first, you know, we want to pick their brain a little bit about what they're watching, reading, or listening to.
So Elizabeth and Mary, beyond being able to recognize Zadie Smith covers by description only, what's on your nightstand or in your tape deck?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks because I drive to our farm on the weekends in July, which is wonderful. I don't get Where's to go the farm? On.
Yeah.
It's in Washington County, which is the northernmost county in the Hudson Valley.
Wow.
So it's a four-hour drive due north from the city, and we're 8 miles from the Vermont border. And we're raising heritage breed poultry there, turkeys and chickens, and certified organic vegetables and flowers.
Wow. What is the name of that farm?
Green Table Farms.
Okay.
Yeah, my husband is the farmer. He decided at age 60 he was ready to leave his career in the film industry and farm.
So. It's never too late to change your life.
That's right.
Or too early.
Or too early.
So I've been listening to how Let the Great World Spin right now, Colin McCollum.
It's such a good New York summer book. It's like a sweaty, hot
and takes book. Me back to my to the you know to the time when I first moved to the city. So it's really interesting from that perspective for me too. And I also listened recently to Brian Stevenson's book, Just Mercy, which is about his work at the Equal Justice Initiative. Mm. And before that, it was Middlemarch.
So. Oh.
Breadth and depth.
Yeah, good stack. Mary, very impressed.
I don't get to read much at, you know, in other than listening these days. So it's a great way for me to keep up.
Yeah. Elizabeth, how about you?
I've been loving the very food-focused issues or episodes of Master of None lately.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh. We've talked about this
probably
on that show.
Right.
I haven't watched season two yet.
Don't even talk to Kim.
I took like an internet break a while back after Food Book Fair, and I've never caught up on shows, and I've been shamed for it ever since.
Tell us what you love about it or what you've appreciated or...
Well, I love, like the other season, it's very New York City. It's a love affair with New York City, which, of course, appeals to me. And, of course, I also loved the episode that was shot in Modena with Massimo Bottura. He is also a huge advocate of addressing food waste, and it's a big part of the work that he's been involved in.
One of the OGs.
That's right. But, you know, he has this comment about, food waste being something that's invisible and you have to make it visible. And another book that I've been rereading as of late, it's definitely a favorite for people who are trash nerds, who I tend to associate with, is Robin Nagel's Picking Up. It's a portrait of sanitation workers and the Department of Sanitation throughout the last several hundred years. And it really talks also, it's also a love affair with New York in that it, you know, really walks the reader through what the city looked like in the beginning and how the tension of urban sprawl and density and how, you know, we have so little land and so much commerce going on here presents a real issue from the perspective of waste. And
wow.
And it's something that we don't think about now, or we think in our sort of modern society it's a modern issue, but it's been an issue as long as New York has been inhabited, at least inhabited by outside entrance.
Yeah. Most of the waste used to go down the estuaries, right?
Yeah.
That's what killed the oysters.
Exactly. And dumped into, you know, Broad Street was basically a creek. A lot of little waterways
Broad
that went
Street.
Through
okay.
New
wow.
York City, went through Lower Manhattan, were eventually had to be paved over or closed because of all the, you know, all the waste and detritus from manufacturing, tanneries and pig rendering facilities that would just be dumped in there. So, you know, it really makes you appreciate sort of the modern sanitation that we have now. And and that, you know, once stuff is taken away by a sanitation worker or by a refuse truck, it doesn't just go away. You may not have to deal with it, but it's still around. And that's something I think, you know, it motivates a lot of our zero waste work in terms of getting people to think more about their waste and what they're producing.
And the commissioner has the goal of Catherine Garcia, our commissioner of sanitation, is to have zero waste to landfills by 2030, which is 13 years from now. So
wow.
we have a lot of work to do right now.
Yeah.
So come to the food waste.
Sounds like we need to give you
and learn what to do.
Perfect. I think Kim and I are done. We're ready to get out of here. I'm not, Mary, you're hired.
It's a week from today.
Yes. Well, we are going to dive into that very shortly. We need to take a quick break and pay some bills around here and direct our listeners and our audience to heritageradionetwork.org. That's where you want to go so that you can support Heritage Radio Network and keep shows like Recommended Reading and others on air. So head over, check out all the shows, and pledge your support, become a member, and we'll give you a high five if you do.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Our show's about beer, cider, things behind it like grains and malts and hop growers, and we'll talk to beer bar owners, brewers, kind of the whole world of what's going on in drinks. Tune in on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Support my show and all of the Heritage Radio Network programs. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Beating Heart to donate.
All right. We are back. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, and we are joined in the studio today by Elizabeth Balkin and Mary Cleaver. They are here to talk about the Food Waste Fair, a brand new event happening July 25th in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Expo Center, which is in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And they're here to tell us all about what the Food Waste Fair is and who should be there, who's going to be there.
And how we're going to get to zero waste by 2030.
Yes. So, ladies, welcome to the show officially.
Thank you. After our
break, I'll welcome you officially back. And we'll really just get into, I think first, we'd love for you to do just a quick introduction, a little bit about yourself and how you became involved in the Food Waste Fair.
Well, I'm Mary Cleaver. I have been in the food business in New York City for 35 plus years. I run a catering and events business, a restaurant, and also a farm where we grow food for the aforementioned. And I, for years, have been working with the regional farm and food economy and trying to support that. And for a long time, was focused on where food came from. And then all of a sudden, I started thinking about where is it going? And my business is in the Chelsea Market, and I've been there for 20 years. And when I moved there, I wanted to start composting, but there wasn't a way to do it. And it took 11 years before we could begin doing that through our actual carting company, which was a very, it was great change. And we approach waste by trying not to make it to begin with, which I think is sort of the first step. But there inevitably is going to be some, and there will be organic waste, and I wanted the organic waste to go back into the soil to continue the cycle of life.
Wow. So. It seems like you have a unique perspective of being, at all the different angles. You're creating food, you're using it in your, restaurants and restaurant and catering, and then you're able to eventually bring it full circle, right? And bring any waste back up to your farm.
Hopefully, yeah. Okay. We're actually not taking too much of it directly to our farm because we don't really have a mechanism to do that yet. But we are, again, in the Chelsea market, it is a, it's a sort of a, it's a, we have to use the carting situation right. that's in the whole part of that community. So there is now a biodigester in the Chelsea market, and an action collects from the biodigester, and also compost that can't go in the biodigester. So.
Got it.
Yeah, and we, Mary and I have been working together for, you know, a number of years. I think more and more at the department, what we're, how we're thinking about Zero by 30 and how we invite and encourage more New Yorkers to join us on this journey is by having ambassadors like Mary, people who are already very much part of our lifestyle preference and also have influence. So, you know, it's not very cool or sexy if the Department of Sanitation tells you to recycle or tells you to compost or to, you know, make sure that your textiles get repurposed. But if a fashion designer tells you that repurposed clothing is cool, or if a chef tells you that food that has made generated very little waste while it was being prepared is cool, then more people will join this mission and join this movement. And we are seeing this a movement taking off right now with food waste. I think more and more there's a connection to not only where, you know, where the importance of knowing where your food comes from and the sustainability of how it was raised and produced, but also what happens to it after. And what the different partners all along the supply chain are doing to ensure that waste is minimized at each step.
Right. And could you just elaborate a little bit on as a rep, as you know, you're here representing the Department of Sanitation, maybe just letting everyone know, like, what exactly does the Department of Sanitation do? What would we maybe be surprised, you know, about? I think going back to your earlier point, sometimes we're just walking around the streets of New York and, you know, most parts are pretty clean, and we don't ever think about, you know, the people behind that. So if you could talk a little bit about that, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So New Yorkers generate almost 20,000 tons of waste per day. That's about a 50-50 split between what's produced by homes and then what's produced by businesses. It's a bit higher than other cities because as New Yorkers, we eat out so much, so we sort of outsource our waste to businesses, if that makes sense. But it's a massive undertaking to collect and then, you know, take that waste to its final place of processing or disposal. We're very reliant upon landfills right now, but there's no landfills in New York City, and there's very few in New York State. So what that means is that a lot of our waste gets exported to landfills in Virginia, in Ohio, you know, up to 500 miles from New York City, which, you know, is obviously not good from an environmental perspective, but it also means that we're not capturing any of the value of that material if it could be recycled or made into compost to help grow food in our local food system. And so, you know, by taking steps to reduce waste and to repurpose it for beneficial reuse, you know, you're actually contributing to a more healthy ecosystem and a better food system.
Right.
And can you elaborate on what you were saying earlier about Zero by 30, which is the zero waste, zero landfill, zero waste going to landfills by 2030, that goal?
Yes.
And that campaign.
And so in 2015, we announced our Zero by 30 framework. What we're doing is we're basically looking at our waste stream like a pie and kind of taking it on slice by slice. And so, for example, organic waste is the largest single element of our waste stream. And so that means that's food scraps, that's leaves, any kind of yard waste, food soiled paper. Those are all materials that should not go into landfill. They produce really harmful methane, which is a greenhouse gas when they're in landfill. But more importantly, they can be you know, a critical way to restore our soil and provide the minerals and nutrients that can, you know, right now we're sort of in a soil crisis. A lot of the soil that's used to grow food, it just doesn't have the nutrients it needs. And so the food doesn't have the nutrients it needs.
Right. We've destroyed 50% of our topsoil in the past 50 years. So, yeah,
we need in the United States or in New York State?
In the United States.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So if you want to eat good food, you need to have good soil. And if you want good soil, you know, that should be, that's what compost does. It helps nurture the soil. And food waste, when it is diverted and made into compost or processed in such a way that it can break down and rot and be eaten by worms, will restore a lot of the nutrient content of that soil. But beyond just composting, I think the goal of our, you know, the zero waste, the, the food waste component of our zero waste goal is really about having people think holistically about the food system in terms of not wasting food and making sure that food that is edible is eaten, either eaten, you know, by people in need, or if it's something, I mean, we love it when people compost. We'd rather feed an animal, or even better, feed a person, or like Mary said, not create waste altogether. And we know that so many chefs out there, this is part of their MO. Restaurants are often very lean. You know, they use chicken bones in stock, and they'll you know, repurpose last night's lamb shanks into tomorrow's lamb ravioli. So all this best practices out there, we're trying to codify it, bring it together, and help support businesses that are trying to figure out how to get started in order to reduce waste in their own operations.
Right. It's an economic question, too. I mean, another shocking statistic is that 40% of the food produced in this country is wasted. So we have a mindset in this country to, you know, that things are just disposable and, you know, to consume or to buy, to purchase, to have, but not necessarily to use productively. You know, many cultures in the world and cuisines of the world are based on using whole animals and using whole vegetables and reusing and, you know, so... it's a behavior change that we really need to make in our society, I think. And the Food Waste Fair is just a really good place for people to come to learn about the facts and how they can begin to affect change for themselves and for their businesses. And chefs have a great responsibility and are, I mean, chefs are awesome anyway, but we have a great responsibility to steward the food supply, and so yeah, hopefully we'll have chefs doing demonstrations at Food Waste Fair.
Yeah, we'll have a live cooking demonstration and tasting, which will be
great,
definitely very fun.
So walk us through the Food Waste Fair. It's happening on July 25th. It's a daytime event. Who should come? What's kind of the day? What does the day look like?
So the fair is really geared towards businesses, New York City businesses. Anyone is welcome, and I think there'll be a lot for anyone to learn from chefs, home chefs, people who cook at home or are just interested in the topic. But really, we're trying to provide resources and information to New York City businesses, especially smaller operations, folks that, you know, might look to bigger businesses and say, well, of course they have a great sustainability program, but I'm a small guy. I can't really do as much. I don't have the resources. So the idea is that they can come to the Food Waste Fair, and it's sort of a one-stop shopping in that we've brought together over 70 vendors, 70 exhibitors who are offering food waste solutions. So these are anything from someone who has developed an app that helps businesses track their waste and be able to try to be, you know, make better procurement decisions to prevent waste, to different outfits like City Harvest that do food rescuing or food donation. Mm-hmm. So if you're a business that has extra food, they can take it and make sure it gets used to feed people in need. Down to, you know, we've got exhibitors that are that have special bins and special compostable bags, and representatives of the facilities upstate and in neighboring states that are doing the processing, either by anaerobic digestion or by composting to recycle the food waste. So we'll have all those exhibitors there, and folks can really learn and connect with all these different food waste solution providers. We're also going to be the Food Waste Fair will include workshops. So if you're a business that says, well, I'd love to do donation, but I'm worried that the Department of Health is going to ding me, then you can come to the Food Waste Fair. We'll have workshops led by the Department of Health on how to handle your food waste and how to pest-proof your business. So, you know, there'll be a strong regulatory component. In other words, businesses that come can really get information that they can't get anywhere else. And they'll have a chance to talk to the Department of Sanitation and the Department of Health about these issues. But also just get really pragmatic tips on easy ways to reduce waste in your own operation. We'll have a workshop led by Elizabeth Meltz of the Batali Group. And that's really like a 10 things that every business can do. And it's simple things like have a shorter menu. Don't be afraid to tell your customers, like, we're out of the fish because we didn't order that much because we don't want to have fish left over at the end of the night. So it's really small things like that, very practical, that businesses can incorporate the next day.
And is the fair something that you can come to for a couple hours? You could be there for the whole day, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all day. It's 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. We'll have the workshops repeating all day. And so if you're a business and you're pressed for time, you can easily come for a few hours and really get the most out of the day. It's very different than a conference in that it's meant to be. It's geared towards and designed for people who are very busy and who need to come and get a lot of information in a compressed time frame.
And Elizabeth, can you talk a little bit about why it's now? It's because of what the law is doing and the progression of the law in terms of the scale of the food businesses who have to comply with it?
Yeah, so in 2013, the city passed a law that requires certain very large food waste generators or operators to basically divert or handle their food waste and their operations in such a way that it doesn't go to landfill. So when we started implementing this law, it was first we only included a very small subsection of the total businesses that could be incorporated because we have this issue of infrastructure shortage. So, you know, as much as we all want to compost, we can't just start putting aside our food waste and then have nowhere to take it. And so what we're doing right now is the market is developing and that kind of that infrastructure is becoming available to take more and more of our food waste. Of course, also the city is expanding our organics program. That's NYC Organics. And that's, you know, the brown bins. And we're asking New Yorkers in their homes to do this as well. So there's more and more material. There's more and more capacity to process the material. So with that, we're proposing the expansion of the commercial organics mandate, which will mean that more businesses will be required to do this. And what we're seeing is that the economics are becoming more favorable. So whereas it used to be, as Mary's talked about, quite difficult and quite costly for businesses to try to get a program underway, now with more capacity, there is it's becoming more economically feasible. And so the Food Waste Fair is a great opportunity for businesses that will be included in the next round, which will be large restaurants over 7,000 square feet, large franchise operations, and supermarkets to come and kind of start to get savvy on all this. Of course, there'll be a time, a period before they have to comply with the law. It won't be in effect for some time, but it's sort of never too early to start in terms of
right. It's a big change to in all the processes and all the staff. Your staff has to be educated. The infrastructure in each facility has to be in place, not only to get it from the facility to the composting locations, but also just how you train your staff. I mean, some exhibitors at the fair who can come into your business and share the whole process and the reason to compost and do it bilingually, for example. So a lot of kitchens in New York have non-English speaking people. So there's a lot of education that has to be done on every level. I mean, our individual residents and also all of our workers in the food system.
Speaking of individual residents, then, since Food Waste Fair is geared a little bit more toward folks working in the industry, can we talk a little bit about things that everyday folks, whether they work in the restaurant industry or are in and around food or not, that they can do? I hear you have some excellent freezer tips. Because let's start with how to make less waste and how do we conserve.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth is the freezer queen, so I guess we should talk about that. Yeah, yeah, but yeah.
Well, I think
trash nerds and freezer queen is the main takeaway from preserving food
in any way, pickling, yeah.
Yeah, I think, we're so lucky in New York now that getting fresh seasonal food is much easier than it ever was before. And, oftentimes I think many of us go to the store and we buy more than we can possibly make. And what makes fresh food great is that it's fresh. You know, nobody wants to buy week old kale or, brown bananas, but sometimes we get busy and we don't have time to make everything, or we're going out of town and we've got something that we don't want to throw away, but we know we can't make. And so I always say the freezer is my friend because it preserves almost anything: cheese, milk, lemons, avocado. It will most of these things will stay in their normal state in the freezer. I mean, they get frozen, but then when they're unfrozen, they can be used. There's almost nothing you can't put in there.
You can also put your compost in there if you don't have time to get
That's
to the
what
green
I
market
do.
To leave it off.
Don't open my freezer.
Yeah, well, I guess I just thinking about myself and my practices, maybe, Mary, you could share a little bit about some ideas that you've had for maybe using some food that you froze. Like, I just never find myself reaching into the freezer to take stuff out as much as I want to. So are there any recipes or anything that, it's particularly great to, or Kim, I see you.
Or what to do with fennel fronds, because I always have so much.
You can just,
And they always end up in the freezer. And if they don't turn into stock, they turn into compost.
Yeah. Well, stock is a really great thing to make, first of all. Like any vegetable, I mean, you can make stock with vegetables, you can make stock with, bones, chicken carcasses. I mean, after Thanksgiving dinner is over, the stock is on the stove. You just start it right away. Constantly be making stock. And then you can reduce it so that it's very concentrated, so it doesn't take up too much room in your freezer. And then just...
That is a step I've never done, because I was just going to ask, how do you store it? Because I basically have quart container after quart container of stock, and then I just...
Ice cube trays.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, so reduce and then put it in the ice cube tray.
Yeah.
Okay.
But don't forget, because if you put that stock of ice into ice cube stock into your iced tea, you're going to be maybe disappointed.
It's like the bone broth of the summer, basically. Yeah. Bone
is someone going to, we could start making that beverage right now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure people would buy it.
Heard it here first.
Don't take our ideas, internet. Yeah. Please.
Well, the other thing that I wanted to bring up that I thought was kind of fascinating was I had the pleasure of attending the preview for the Food Waste Fair, which was called the Amuse-Bouche, and Mary spoke there, and as someone who goes to a lot of events and also produces them, it was really amazing how much attention to detail was given to creating almost essentially zero waste at that event. And would love to kind of talk about a little bit, a couple of the things that happened there. I know there was definitely food and drink served, and how you created that kind of environment, in a social setting, or, and what went into that.
Well, we do try to practice what we preach. So
definitely. Yeah. It stayed, that definitely made an impression on me.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think, Mary was very helpful, and we couldn't have done it without her support. But I was very proud that we had, a great menu of about 12 different dishes and beverages, all things that were made from ingredients or components that would have been discarded. So, you know, we had some really great shortbread cookies made from a flour that is actually made from grain that comes from a brewery. At the same time, we had beer that was made from stale bread. So you kind of had this bread to beer back to bread or pastry cycle. And that's something that I think people, once you can think about that closed loop and see it and taste it and also, you know, realize that it's not a sacrifice. That's what I kept thinking and telling people is like, this is not a gimmick. This is just good food. It's just it's food that's been made with purpose in the same way that you might have purpose when you're thinking about eating organically or eating organic food or eating fish that's sustainably farmed or caught. But the other thing that I think was my takeaway from the amuse-bouche was how each of the items on the menu was the element of it being made from waste was highlighted, which was obviously to some people a real turnoff. You know, if we had just billed the items as something, you know, like just saying all butter shortbread, and then people tasted them, they would think, wow, this is delicious shortbread. But when it was something that was made from an ingredient that would normally have been thrown away, there was kind of this impression or assumption that it was going to be suboptimal or disgusting. So I think that's kind of where we are at a moment of this kind of education, and it's both trendy, but it's also it's a leap,
but it's, you know, it's walking through a door, right? It's another horizon kind of. People used to say to me, don't talk about your food being organic. People think it's dirty, you know, brown and dirty. You know, I didn't take that advice, by the way, but but Elizabeth's right. A lot of it is how you perceive it, and it's education. There's a lot of education to do, and that's how we can change people's behavior. But also, yeah, it's delicious. I mean, and it's an interesting challenge for chefs and artisan producers, and really exciting that it's being so sort of taken up. I mean, the different products that were at the amuse-bouche were really interesting. And, of course, then the oysters from the Billion Oyster Project, where the shells go back and get aired and dried and then reseeded and put back in the harbor. So, you know, that is another regenerative aquaculture.
I loved how those were served, like, just as is. And you don't need a plate, and you don't need a napkin. And
it comes with its own built-in plate.
And that was, you know, I think, as I said, you know, attending other events and, you know, always being handed that plate or that napkin and then just seeing the oysters served that way made me think, like, wow, this is something, you know, we can do, or this is something you can do every day. And a lot of, you know, nature's most delicious items come with their own plate or serving utensil. Just have to think about it a little bit more. So I really thought that was a great preview into the larger event Food Waste Fair, which is happening July 25th. And for more information, you can check out foodwastefair.nyc, see who the exhibitors are going to be, and maybe just if we could end with each of you giving, you know, a highlight or what you're most looking forward to at the Food Waste Fair. If that's something, or I know it's overall, but, you know, something that we can let our audience, you know is happening and they can earmark.
Or for our audience members who aren't in New York City or won't be able to make it next Tuesday, what resources do you would recommend that they could read, listen, or watch?
Yeah, so there's obviously a great amount of information on the DSNY website for businesses that are looking to get involved and to get more information. And we will continue to keep the foodwastefair.nyc website updated with some of the findings or some of the takeaways from the fair. But I think as far as what I'm looking forward to, besides the fair being over, since it's dominated my life.
We feel you. We totally feel you.
No, but there's going to be some great chefs and some great demonstrations. And I think that's really going to be helping a lot of people bridge the gap, not only in terms of giving them a how-to for food preparation and using ingredients that might otherwise be overlooked, and how to make the most out of those and really do that in a way that would appeal to your customer, but also save money. I think that's the big driver, is that, you know, as a business, we're help the Food Waste Fair is designed to help you not only reduce your waste, but really avoid fines and cut costs. So, like, this is not a portrait of sustainability that is unattainable or lofty, but ultimately undoable. The idea is that this is going to be hopefully very accessible for people. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is seeing how the attendees kind of respond to what they take away from the Food Waste Fair.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of people learn. Learn new tricks and focus on this issue and just the spreading of information. That's what I look forward to.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us
today.
On Recommended
Thanks
Reading.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
Yeah, we've been
so fun.
Oh, it was good. Great. It is fun talking about food waste. It can be fun, educational, and good for our environment. So thank you once again to Elizabeth Balkin for being here.
Thank you.
And Mary Cleaver.
Thanks for having us.
Information can be found at foodwastefair.nyc. So please do head over there, check it out, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Food Waste Fair. Kim? Any last
words?
Just
nodded, which no one could hear on the internet. Yeah, we'll be there. Holler at us at Food Book Fair across all social platforms if you're going to be there, if you got a tip. If there's other recommended reading you like, you want to be on our show. Actually, don't holler at us about that. And stay tuned. We're going to be back next week with some edible stuff. And we'll see you soon, online and in real life.
Thank you to our engineer, David Tatasciore. Always a pleasure having you in the booth.
And thanks always to Heritage Radio Network. Remember, keep supporting them. Click on that beating heart on Heritage's website to keep supporting food, book fairs, recommended reading, as well as dozens and dozens of other great shows.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.